And that brings us up to our third case set for argument, which is Johnson versus United States, case number 24-2779.
Good afternoon. Danielle Betancourt for the appellant Charlie Johnson as trustee of the Charlie E. Johnson Revocable Living Trust. I'm also here today with my co-counsel, Mr. William Klain, and Mr. Johnson and his wife have also joined us today as well in the court. This case involves the United States Forest Service partial denial of Mr. Johnson's Small Tract Act application that resulted in the reduction of his proposed tract from 8 acres down to 0.59 acres. And under the APA, asking this court to review this decision and the decision of the lower court because of the fact that it excluded a majority of accruals involved in these improvements that were encroaching on Forest Service property. Most specifically, Mr. Johnson challenges the decision to do this reduction on the basis that these corrals were not considered to be encroachments, on that they were not, in fact, trespassing on Forest Service property, but were instead range improvements, as well as challenging the Forest Service decision of their appraisal value of that parcel that they did give to Mr. Johnson of 0.59 acres. That included a part of a house, a barn, additional sections of the corrals, as well as a well.
Can I ask you, as I look at the district court order, if I understand it correctly, the district court said, well, there was no allegation of noncompliance with a mandatory provision, and therefore there could not have been an APA violation. Is that accurate? No violation of the Small Tracts Act.
That is what the court held below. That is correct, and said that we didn't raise any issues that showed that they violated a mandatory.
What I'm wondering is that correct law? Because I don't understand, and I think that's your argument, is that the law is in, the district court misstated the law. It doesn't require a mandatory provision. Even discretionary provisions can still be violated under in the Small Tracts Act.
Yes, Your Honor. So I think that there can be some discretion in the law and given to agencies on agency decision making. But if you have specific factors and consideration that the Forest Service must look at, or an agency, any agency, that they would have to comply and look at those factors before making a decision. And it's those factors and statutes and regulations that can, in fact, be reviewable by the courts. So whether they have a complete discretion in the end to decide whether to convey the land or exchange under the Small Tract Act, they do have to follow the other requirements under the Small Tract Act and the implementing regulations.
But the district court, as I understand it, never really went into whether they looked at all the factors, because it just said out of the gate, there's no mandatory provision, therefore I'm not going to go further.
I would agree with that. I think they may have briefly only mentioned the fact that they said, well, they did look at public interest factors and considered those, but otherwise they didn't go in depth into any other of the arguments.
And so just assuming we were to agree with you on that, what would the proper outcome be? Would we just say, listen, this is a wrong statement of the law. Discretionary factors are enough. Should we then go in and do the discretionary factor analysis, or should we remand to the district court to do what it didn't do in the first instance?
I think the potential is to do it in – potentially you could go either way on how you decide what you have the court do, or whether you decide this case on your own, only because of the fact that they did make some kind of finding that they did consider the public interest factors and considered other factors and noted parts of the record in which they talked about it for the 0.59 acre parcel. But I think also what we've argued, you know, where there may be some potential that you'd have to be remanded back to the district court is a failure to look at the parcel in its entirety and consider all the public interest factors, as well as the
also,
other.
Also, don't we have to determine the validity of the district court's or the determination on the encroachment?
Correct.
I mean, is there enough in the record for us to do that?
I think there would be enough in the record. I mean, we have what was in the record in front of the Forest Service, although potentially I think maybe additional support would be nice to see in the record. But I know in terms of whether there is actually any of that type of information at the Forest Service level, it's unclear. I mean, I think there's an issue with, and speaking in terms of the range improvements that were put in place in the 1950s, there's nothing in the record showing that the Forest Service actually ever improved that construction. And what we have seen and what we have in the record is the fact that these were put in place and put in place on private property. They also were shown on the tax rolls for Gila County, and the landowners pay taxes on those improvements.
Is that all in the record?
It's in the record through statements from Mr. Johnson.
Let me ask you this. The review provision says that its decision is discretionary and shall be made only if found to be in the public interest. If it had only said discretionary, this seems to me a very easy case because we review often for abuse of discretion. The mere fact that it's discretionary doesn't mean it's insulated from review. Mm-hmm. Does the additional language saying and shall be made only if found to be in the public interest alter that analysis?
Your Honor, I don't think it necessarily alters the analysis. I know that was quoting from the regulations, I believe.
Yes, correct.
But I also think under the Small Tract Act, there's other requirements that have to be discussed, and that is the determining factor whether there's an actual encroachment, which is an improvement claimed under color or claimed of title or a color of title. That has to be also discussed and analyzed prior to getting to that public interest determination. And I think that's one in which the Forest Service kind of failed on its end on in regards to the portions of the corral that it determined to exclude.
And maybe we don't have to decide this now. If we do remand, a finding as to whether or not it is in the public interest or not, is that reviewed for abuse of discretion or is that reviewed under a different standard?
I believe that's also reviewed under the Administrative Procedure Act for abuse of discretion, would be the same standard.
Is it abuse of discretion or arbitrary or capricious review? I guess I'm getting confused now.
I think I am too, Your Honors. I apologize.
If we remand, I guess that's for the district judge to go ahead and then if we disagree, we can disagree later.
Okay. Yeah, and I think what I'm also thinking of is arbitrary and capricious as well looking at whether they considered all the reasonable factors and gave a rational explanation for their decision below in terms of the agency.
Are there any cases? I mean, Small Tracts Act, I guess there's not a lot of cases that come up. I mean, we struggled to kind of find some precedent here. Maybe I'm asking the wrong party. I suppose the Forest Service would know this better, but do these cases come up a lot or they do, but they're normally just handled administratively and there's not they don't end up in litigation?
Right. I would say Small Tract Act cases probably don't come up as often. We do have the Luciano v. United States that came up in the Eastern District of California. And that one specifically dealt with the issue of whether they could review this type of claim under the Small Tract Act. And ultimately, that part of the decision didn't come to the Ninth, but the decision on the merits of the case went to the Ninth. So you have that decision. I know the appellees also cited a decision from the District of Alaska, but it dealt with a Small Tract Act, a prior statute. It was a different statute that was repealed by FLTMA, the Federal Land Policy and Management Act. So it wasn't considering the same statute nor the regulations associated with it. And then the only other thing I could say kind of liken these issues to is the fact that courts have looked at maybe more often is land exchanges that occur under the Federal Land Policy and Management Act. So
are there any analogies we can make to some of those other statutes as far as whether it's judicially reviewable?
I think in some sense, but I would have to if I am recalling correctly, in the Greer Coalition, the U.S. Forest Service and others, is that in FLTMA, I think there's a particular provision that specifically says that land reviews and our land sales and exchanges or just land exchanges are reviewable are reviewable decisions of the agency. So I think they have more specific language in that statute as opposed to what's written in the Small Tract Act. Although I would still say they have comparable because they consider some of the same types of things in terms of whether it was appropriate to do the exchange within the public interest, as well as kind of determining the approximate equal value when they're doing the exchange, similar to the Small Tract Act.
I guess let me ask you this. How did the district court, in your opinion, get this wrong?
Yeah,
I mean, you're here on an appeal that you properly filed in a timely fashion. How did they get this wrong?
Correct. I think, Your Honor, it's a great question. And what I think what was wrong in their decision is the fact that they really never even got to the merits of our discussion.
Exactly.
Because they felt that they didn't have the ability to review the issues that we brought forth. But as we discussed earlier and as I discussed in our briefing, I think that was an error. And I think they did have the ability to review our arguments, as well as the fact, you know, I think they brushed off the idea of whether this was an encroachment or not. It didn't matter. It was in a posit. But that wasn't an incorrect holding. It absolutely mattered because you have to be able to show that there was an encroachment in the first place to be even qualify for consideration of the Small Tract Act. So if you're being excluded at the outset, no analysis is being done.
So if we were to say this should have been reviewable and we remand it, I guess that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win. I mean, you would have to go back to the district court, and now the district court says, okay, it's reviewable. And then we get into all these other questions, which sort of they seem a little thornier as we start talking about them, which makes me think that if we were to go this route, we would just remand. I'm not sure we want to weigh into them in the first instance. You would like us to, I assume, but
you'd rather win now than.
I mean, obviously, and I think my client would also like you to as well.
It's only been 20 years, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's been an extremely long time on this case, and specifically, you know, I think we would prefer you guys to be able to decide and not have to remand back to the lower court. But I also understand.
I think relevant to what we're talking about, do we have any insight as to why the Forest Service changed its mind? That is to say, originally it was quite willing to sell the entire piece of property, mm-hmm. And then it changed its mind. Do we know why?
Yes. So the only reason the Forest Service changed its mind and had this decision was the fact that they said, well, the corrals – are listed in a 2006 term grazing permit as a range improvement. So they're an authorized range improvement in which title is in the United States, and we cannot sell that to you or sell the underlying land back to you.
Your argument is that the corral that the grazing permit identified is a different corral than you're trying to get.
That's correct. I mean, that's from our understanding, and it's unclear from the record. I think that's what's the problem is – through the years, the location on maps and everything else has been different, sometimes further north, sometimes actually on the private property to the south, denoting corrals. And so I think that's where the confusion comes. And there's been nothing in the record or nothing that the Forest Service has provided to show that they had ever at any point authorized this range improvement.
And your explanation is maybe going against what you want, because as you explain this, I'm thinking – how are we in a position to decide that question? I mean, even you've just said it's unclear in the record. Like, I think the district court would be in a better position to look at that. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe there's not enough information.
Well, I think maybe I'd clarify when I mean it's unclear. I think the position of the Forest Service is unclear in terms of how they can just point to a grazing permit map to claim that this somehow is no longer considered an encroachment or not an innocent trespass when they have nothing else to support their decision.
Right, but so what do you do? I mean, even if we send this back to the district court, the ultimate relief you can get, I think, is to send it back to the Forest Service to relook at it, and you're still not guaranteed to get the result you want there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they may come up with a different rationale, or they may come up with more evidence or whatever. I'm just trying to, I mean, figure out how this games out, and it's not clear.
Correct. And I would agree in terms of some uncertainty in terms of what would happen if it gets remanded, or even if it gets remanded back to the agency. They obviously would be able to look at the decision again and reevaluate. Our hope would be it wouldn't take them 14 years like it did in the past, and that they could actually get us a result much sooner. But I also would be the hope that they would come to a similar correct decision as they did with all the other improvements on the property.
And I don't assume from, as I sit here, that the district judge necessarily is, even if the district judge agrees with your basic position, has to remand. We'll see, but I certainly don't want to foreclose the district court from making the decision and ending this long saga.
Right. If there's no questions at this time, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Actually, just one more question, and mm-hmm. then I'll let you reserve. You also challenged the Edwards appraisal. I assume, again, hypothetically, if we were to say this needs to, the district court needs to take another look at this, under that scenario, we would not need to reach the Edwards appraisal because it might not be relevant, right?
Correct. And although it may still be relevant, I guess we don't want, and we're not asking the court to change the decision on the sale of that 0.59 acres, the sale that occurred on those portions. You know, we don't want to get in a situation where that gets back and then they say, we're not going to sell it to you. We agree with that portion of it. We do dispute the appraisal, but I do think there was enough in the record, enough in the decision of the court below in deciding that they felt that the appraisal was not arbitrary and capricious and that it was supported. Although we would disagree in the sense, the fact that whether they used the right type of land sale comparables or looked at the highest and best use of this property.
Well, there weren't many land sales around to compare it to, were there?
No, there was not, and I'd have to agree with you on that point. I think they could have maybe tried to find some other properties, though, in which it was just agricultural vacant land instead of properties located in subdivisions and the like, because that's not what this property is. This property is surrounded on the north by the Forest Service land, and then to the south and surrounding Mr. Johnson's other land, which is 21 acres.
But isn't Judge Nelson's question important? Because, you know, if we remand this, you're going to be talking about, hopefully your client's going to be talking about a much bigger tract, and there's going to be a need for a new appraisal.
Yes, that's correct. It could be done too separately from the tract that was already conveyed and already sold to Mr. Johnson, because that has already gone through and been done, and all we challenge is the actual appraisal value given. So the other tract could be its own separate addition to what was already conveyed to Mr. Johnson, so it would just include the corrals, the remaining portion of the corrals.
Do you want to reserve?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Neil Singh. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney from the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Phoenix, and I represent the Forest Service, the United States, and all of the five federal defendants who have been named in this case. And, Your Honors, I'm sure you'll have a lot of questions for me, but I'd like to just get one introductory point out to you as we start, which is that this is a private land transaction between two citizens. And the United States is involved in this case because there was an accident that intruded on an accident in terms of the purchase that intruded on federal land. And the Forest Service in the United States have an interest in protecting their discretion to protect federal lands. And that's what this case really is about.
I don't take issue with that characterization, but you have an interest in that. But what the district court did here, and I'd be interested in your response to this, because the district court said, well, this is just not reviewable at all. That seems to be incorrect. Now, that doesn't mean you ultimately lose at the end of the day. But I wonder, don't we need to correct that and say, no, these are reviewable under the Small Tracts Act? I'd be interested in your response to that.
Yes. Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree that the district court with that characterization of what the district court was trying to do. And I would agree that there is some back and forth on the question of sovereign immunity and discretion and judicial review when we're reading all of the opinions that are at issue in this case. The district court, in my view, as I read the opinion, held that, first of all, it disagreed with the government in stating when the government argued that there is no discretion or there's no judicial review at all. But the district court then went to look at Mr. Johnson's arguments and found that there are no arguments of specific violations of whatever obligations the government had. And since there were no specific arguments of specific violations of any of the statutory clauses or of the regulations, there's no basis to conduct a judicial review on whether the government.
But the Small Tracts Act had these 12 factors. Okay, and your National Forest Service evaluated this request for the conveyance or the correction of the deeds under those 12 factors, and then came to the conclusion that they could only transfer 0.59 acres, okay, under the discretion it was given. And they're saying, well, they exercised the discretion improperly. Why is that wrong, and why doesn't that give us jurisdiction? Doesn't that give the courts jurisdiction to review what your agency did?
Well, I think one difficulty in this case that the district court had to grapple with is that there is no specific statutory violation that Mr. Johnson can point to that the government committed. The government has an obligation under the Small Tracts Act and under its own regulations to look at all of the factors. And there's no allegation that the government failed to look at those factors.
Well, we don't really know. That's part of the problem, because the district court said there's no mandatory provision, so therefore I can't review it. And that's where I keep getting hung up. Now, it's not clear to me that there's not mandatory. I mean, it may well be that there are mandatory provisions in the Small Tracts Act, but at a minimum, even if you consider them as discretionary, you still would review it for arbitrary or capricious application by the agency.
Your Honor, one of the more interesting passages that I found in the case law that applies to this case is actually from this court's decision, and there's everyone agrees that there's not a lot of case law here, but there are actually two cases from this court, 1969 and 1970, that I do think this court and this panel will have to, well, should reconcile if they are going to make a determination about sovereign immunity. And the one that I'm thinking of right now is Mollahan versus Gray, 413 F. 2nd, 349. That's the 1969 case, which it did not concern the Small Tracts Act, but it did concern the Administrative Procedure Act.
Wasn't that rejected in 1975 in Strickland v. Morton?
Wasn't
that called into question by the court's decision in 1975 in Strickland versus Morton?
Your Honor, I remember Strickland, but I can't speak to whether it overturned the passage that I'm focusing on. So, granted, I don't remember the holding of Strickland and whether it applies. But the rule in Mollahan, which has to be subject to Strickland, as you point out, was the Ninth Circuit in that court looked at the question of mandatory versus permissive statutes. And just because a statute does contain mandatory provisions does not mean that the government does not have discretion that the courts should stay away from. That's the only purpose of my mentioning
Mollahan.
Right,
but that doesn't, even that doesn't control whether there's judicial review. I mean, the district court thought, I think incorrectly, that because there wasn't, I mean, he might have been wrong on two points. At least he was wrong on one. He said, if it's not mandatory, I can't review it. That seems wrong. And then he said, this is not mandatory. That might also be wrong. So I just don't know how I guess we could affirm it on alternate basis. We could say, okay, we're going to review it. We're going to look at the merits. And we're going to find that this was not arbitrary and capricious, but then we run into would you advocate for us doing that? Do you think we have enough before us to do that?
Yes, I would advocate for this panel to do that. And I believe that the district court was also trying to do that. The district court made a determination that it had no jurisdiction, but it did turn to examine the record and see whether the government had acted arbitrarily and capriciously. And again, the record is empty. of allegations that the government in some way ignored the factors that it needs to look at when making this determination.
Well, but this happens with enough frequency that we're quite familiar with this. The government has a several-factor test. It exercises discretion. It discusses all of the factors. But that doesn't mean that the government is right and should be affirmed. I mean, just because it ticks off the factors doesn't mean that they didn't abuse their discretion.
I agree with that, Your Honor. And if there's something in the record to show a clear error, then yes, the government is wrong. If there's something in the record to show some fundamental misunderstanding or misinterpretation. I think perhaps the only big fact question in this case that is really disputed is the ownership status of the corrals, and the panel will find very little in the record to speak to that, certainly to support.
But that begs the question whether we should jump into it. You're saying, it sounds like both parties are asking us now to jump into it. You both think that we're going to rule in your favor on the merits if we get there. And I'm looking at this saying, I'm not sure how to make heads or tails of this.
Well,
can't you just go give them the corral? Let's be done. Well, I'll go out there. We'll look at the corral. We'll turn it over. We'll have a ceremony. And you just do that.
Well, Your Honor, the Forest Service wants the discretion to do what it I guess what it is statutorily mandated to do with federal lands, and that, whether that is to allow.
And that's the bottom line is you don't think you even have you don't view yourself as even having the discretion to, even if you wanted to sell him the corrals. Is that your position?
That is correct, because the corrals were never private property. There's nothing in the record to suggest that they were private property.
There's
nothing
in the record to show that they were government property.
What we have, candidly, Your Honor, what we have in the record are statements from both sides.
Right.
So we have a letter from Mr. Johnson stating what his views are on the corrals. And then we have an internal email within the Forest Service that is in the record. And we also have a letter from the Forest Service to Mr. Johnson describing the status of the corrals. As far as I know, that's all there is in the record. Now, I would still go back to point out that it is the Forest Service that has the expertise in determining what is the status and the ownership and the legal status of the corrals and the land.
Well, but the allegation is you were looking at different corrals. I mean, I have no idea. I don't know. But that's the allegation, and that suggests that you might not have gotten this right.
Well, there would have to be something. I guess my response to that point, Your Honor, would be that Mr. Johnson still has an obligation to point to, in the record, what was gotten wrong. And there has to be something wrong for there to be a showing that the government acted arbitrarily in this case or unfairly in violation of the administration.
Well, isn't it in the record that the seller of the property to Mr. Johnson asserted that they exercised control over those corrals and that those were corrals that were their corrals? Isn't that in the record?
I don't know of a record site for that. I don't dispute that Mr. Johnson believed that at the time of the transaction between him and the seller. But the government's view has never changed. The corrals are range improvements.
The government's view did change. Originally, you were going to convey 4.17 acres and even indicated to the congressman at the time that conveyance was going to go through. So somewhere along the line, you changed your mind.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't dispute that. I mean, whether we call it changing your mind or whether over a multi-year process.
Multi-decade.
The government's view and the Forest Service view of how this land needed to be treated is fluid, depending on what they learn about the land. And studies have to be conducted.
But why doesn't that uncertainty just give you enough discretion here to end this case? I mean, this is just, you know, my big fear is that if we remand this, I mean, we want to get the law right. But if we remand this, I'm not sure we're getting anybody further along in the process of actually resolving this case. And I'm wondering if the Forest Service can't, I know you can't do what you don't have discretion to do, but I just, it seems like it's hard to imagine you couldn't make this happen in some way.
Well, Your Honor, the one other thing that is, I think, bears on why the Forest Service makes the decisions that it does is that it is mandated to. The law states that these conveyances of land, of federal land, need to be as small as prudent.
I totally get that. Yes. I just wonder if you could go back. I would encourage you to advise your client to go back and take a look at whether this could be resolved. I understand you can't set a precedent that you can't adhere to in the future, but boy, there just seems like enough uncertainty here that I'm just not sure that you should be so bought in that we don't have authority.
Yeah, if we were in the Third Circuit, we would suggest that you may want to consider sending this to our Third Circuit mediator.
I was just going to ask, we do have mediation service. Has this case been mediated? Has there been some attempt to mediate?
I think there was talk of mediation, but we did not participate in a mediation.
You have a concept of a plan?
Concept of a plan.
Okay. But there's been no mediation?
That is correct, Your Honor.
I would suggest that you go to the Ninth Circuit meeting.
Send it to the Third Circuit.
Yeah.
Are they better than ours?
Well, they're unbiased.
Ninth Circuit mediators are pretty good, and it might inform the Forest Service position in mediation. It may be helpful to know that I would sure like to end this case right now by holding against the Forest Service if we have to get to the merits. That would be helpful to you in mediation to know
perhaps.
That?
Perhaps.
Okay, but I think our mediators may be able to help here.
If no other questions, Your Honor, I will.
That wasn't a resounding yes.
Well, I'm happy to talk, and opposing counsel and I have had a dialogue from the beginning of this case, so happy to discuss any of those possibilities. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think I'd address just that last point on the mediation. I do know that it was discussed and there was conversation surrounding it, and some discussions on what could possibly be done to try to resolve this, and ultimately weren't able to get much further along.
I don't want to intrude in this too much. Did you ever talk to one of our mediators?
Yes, as I'm recalling that we had some conversations either via email and separately on phone.
Yeah, and I don't want to inquire further because it's our policy for us as the judges to stay away from the mediators. They don't tell us what happens in mediation.
Correct. Yeah.
Except when they get to an answer.
Yeah. I'd also kind of want to just address briefly the Mullahan v. Gray case on the Taylor Grazing Act. I think those are old cases, and they have obviously been kind of narrowed a little bit. Specifically, this court in Portland General Electric Company v. Bonneville Power Administration talked about how that there is, in terms of agency action committed discretion by law, precludes review, but that this is now – it's a narrow exception, and you have to show that there's absolutely no law to apply in the circumstances. I recall Strickland, but I can't recall the exact specifics, so that's why I referenced this other case. As well as this, too, and I think Apelli made a mention of there have the complete discretion to determine whether an improvement is an encroachment or not. I think they have the discretion to approve a land sale, and part of that determination is determining if there's an encroachment that could qualify under the land sale. But it doesn't mean that that can't be reviewed and determined whether they gave a rational basis for the decision and whether it's actually supported by the evidence in the record as to why they are determining that it's not an encroachment, which in briefing and in below we argued was the fact that we don't believe they had enough to show that or to show that these weren't in fact encroachments that were claimed as owned by the private landowner under claim of title or color of title, previous landowner and the current landowner, Mr. Johnson. So based on that, I would just ask this court to decide in favor of the appellant in finding that the decision of the Forest Service was arbitrary and capricious, was not supported by the facts in the record, and should be I want to be careful. It should be either set aside or it should be remanded back to the court to consider these issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments today. The case is submitted, and that concludes our arguments for today's session.